Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Stafford Fire and Rescue in this morning. Deputy Fire Chief Ben Goldman here along with Katie Brady, Public Information Officer with Stafford Fire and Rescue. Good morning to both of you. Good to have you here this morning.
Thanks for having us.
Katie, you were just here, it seems like, just the other day, talking about river safety. And boy, we need to keep talking and talking and talking about that, because we were just talking. Now, there are still so many people who, first of all, use the river and don't use a life jacket, or around water and don't use a life jacket. That's a bad idea.
Yes. I mean, we have gotten a load of rain in the last few weeks, it seems like. You know, there were points last year where the Rappahannock River, it seemed like, was more like a creek. But we have a river this year,
yeah.
And that's great, and it's an awesome resource for everyone to enjoy safely. And the way you do that is wearing your life jacket. Wear your PFD. And maybe you don't think it looks cool, but like we talked about last time, there's so many different options now. And life jackets are what keeps you afloat when things happen. That river can be unpredictable. With that rain, a lot of debris has washed down the river, like tree trunks and root balls and things like that. And those are things that people are getting snagged on. And,
yeah.
You know, that current doesn't stop. And it can really pull people under. It can get people stuck. The water is moving quickly. It creates those channels. So maybe in one place you're in knee deep water and you walk a little bit further and all of a sudden you're down, it's chest high water. So just being aware of what you're doing and where you're going and what the river conditions are and what the water or the weather is going to be doing. We get those afternoon thunderstorms that randomly pop up.
They can come right up.
Yeah, they just pop up out of the middle of nowhere, and that life jacket is really going to help you out if you find yourself in a sticky situation.
And the statistic that always gets me is the fact that no one with a life jacket has ever drowned in the river.
We have not had someone drown on the river who was wearing a life jacket. Now, you can still get yourself in a sticky situation with a life jacket on, but it's going to keep you afloat. It's going to keep you safe until we can get to you. And like we talked about last time, a lot of people are like, well, I'll just keep it on my paddleboard. I'll just keep it on my kayak or my canoe. I'll keep it handy. Well, when your watercraft capsizes and starts, and the current takes it down the river and you're stuck there, that PFD is not doing you much good when it's, 50 yards down the river.
In those kind of situations, you don't have time to think and to put it on and to do all that. It takes a minute or two to put it on when you're on land before
exactly.
You go in.
Yeah, so just wear your life jacket. It's going to help you out so much if you do find yourself in one of those situations. It's going to help us as rescuers out.
That's the other thing. I was just going to say to you, Katie, that you're putting fire and rescue at risk of having to go out in those conditions.
And we have a very highly trained swift water team. I would argue one of the best in the state. And they are trained to go out in those really treacherous conditions. But still, having that, it's going to take us a minute to get there. We do have the river standby on the weekends, but frequently we need more than just the three or four who are there. They're there to assist and help mitigate any issues, but we're gonna have to call in more people. And like any emergency, it's gonna take us at least a few minutes to get there. And if you have that life jacket on, you're gonna have those few minutes to be safe until we can get to you.
Well, and like you said, we've gotten a lot of rain. The river is high, and it may be like today, maybe a nice day, and you want to. This is the day you want to go out with your kayak or your paddleboard. But check river conditions, and if it's too high, don't go.
There's several websites, apps, things like that you can go and check, see what the river conditions are like. Even on the river, we've got the river indicators that indicate how high it is. If you see it in the yellow, if you can only see yellow or red on that. I mean, that's not the time to be out on the river.
No.
Maybe wait another day. I know it's a bummer if you have plans, but your safety is most important.
And a lot of times the river levels here are determined. You may think, well, we haven't had any rain for a few days, but it has rained in Culpeper and, you know, in some of those cases, and where the river is, the water is coming from there, and it's going to be higher here.
Yes. So if they get rain further out west, even if we don't see a ton of rain here, if that system moves north, we're going to see that water coming down eventually.
Yeah. But like you said, boy, and I forget those river gauges are really a good indicator. Yes. Of what things are, and like you say, when it's yellow and red, even if you think, well, I know what I'm doing, don't, and for all the reasons we've talked about, don't chance it.
Yeah, and just, you know, one more thing about recreating on the river, make sure your watercraft is appropriate. You know, some of the tubes that you buy at, you know, a dollar store or a big box store, they may not be able to stand up against some of the debris, the rocks, the current of the river. We get people whose tubes are just, they can't handle it, or they buy the cheapest thing they can. And I understand things are expensive, but talk to some of our local experts, figure out what watercraft is going to be safest and that you're actually going to make it down the river in, and you're not going to have to get out and walk down the river or, you know, walk down the bank because your tube popped.
Yeah, no, that is a great thing. And also know in that same light too, not all kayaks are the same. Some are for fishing. They're not. Everything is not the same. And if you get into water conditions, that's when you can capsize.
Yes, making sure you have the right watercraft for what you're trying to do. When you're taking the time to look at river conditions, hopefully you've already taken the time to use some of our local resources, talk to some of our local experts who live and breathe this river, and they're going to be able to help you get the equipment that you need to have a fun and safe time on the river.
There is the Respect the Rap website that has great information. You can go there, and that can be kind of a starting point to all this.
It's an excellent starting point.
So check that out. We are talking safety this morning. We're going to jump into some fire things when we come back. Stafford Fire and Rescue in this morning. Quick break. We'll be back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Download the all-new News Talk 1230 WFVA app for Apple and Android. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Stafford Fire and Rescue in this morning. Ben Goldman and Katie Brady in this morning talking things. You guys have kind of become, we get together seasonally. We get together at Christmas time and now and probably another time in the fall. So I like having you guys in to talk about this stuff. Hey, our Weather Channel guy kept talking about it last week, and I saw it on some of the TV forecasts of people talking about the Canadian fires. Wasn't like a few years ago where you could actually smell things around here. At least for me, I didn't. But people said they noticed the haze, and you could notice things around here.
Yes, with the fires being so large up there, the smoke gets up into the atmosphere, gets up in the jet stream, and wherever the jet stream is pushing it, just happens to the jet stream now comes down below us and comes back up, so it pushes the smoke to upper levels up to us. And every once in a while, you look outside and it's hazy.
Yeah.
It's coming from that smoke. Most of the time, you can't see it, though.
Is this some kind of a new... I don't ever remember this in the past. Is it because of the jet stream? Are there more fires? Or they're just here?
They're just here.
Okay.
They're just here.
Okay.
I'm not the weatherman.
Boy, the fires... the you look at those kinds of fires, and they're always the California fires later in the year. Boy,
everybody knows about the California fires. Yeah. They're always... California, it's the landscape out there, and then the lack of water.
And they've had a drought and all those.
A small fire turns quickly out that way. The wind. The wind drives a lot of those fires also.
I'm sure you all, when we've had some of this wet weather in the spring, are glad to see that, because around Virginia in the fall, it can be rough.
Oh, absolutely. We pray for rain all the time, because when it's dry, it doesn't take long for a small campfire or small control burn to get out of control and spread quickly through the dry vegetation that's on the ground.
I've seen some of the damage afterwards on, you know, like in the Shenandoah Valley, some of those fires, and it's pretty spectacular.
Oh yes, it's very devastating to the landscape.
So speaking of, you mentioned campfires. We'll jump into that one. That's an important when we talk about summer things in being outdoors. Knowing how to enjoy a campfire, but then knowing how to put it out.
Oh, absolutely. You always want to have a water source. Or let's start with you want it to be protected, right? So having a ground campfire surrounded by rocks, it helps prevent the fire from escaping out.
Okay.
Along the ground. Now, embers do fly off and they can land somewhere, so you want to have a water source to extinguish those little fires that could happen. And then when you're done with your campfire, you want to extinguish it. You just don't want to leave it burning. And walk away from it, and you want to attend it. You want somebody around there all the time while it's burning.
And probably don't make it too big when you talk about.
No, campfires are like 3x3, 2x2 size.
Sometimes though, let's have a big campfire and enjoy ourselves.
A bonfire is different, right? So yeah. Bonfire is bigger. You can, and it's the same principle, right? You want to protect it, and you want to be out there watching it, and you want to have a water source to extinguish it. When it's time to extinguish it,
and I guess also make sure you know of any kind of local ordinances or laws or things like that or what's going on, because I know like the 4 p.m. burn law always catches a lot of people.
February 15th to April 30th, 4 p.m. burn law, and that's due to climate conditions during the day. Or at 4 p.m., the climate conditions get better for you to be able to burn, less likely for it to spread.
Yeah.
Even then, there are some days that we'll issue out a burn ban where we don't want you to burn after 4 p.m. either. And knowing the laws, one of the local ordinances is you're required to notify our dispatch center before you burn, and they will... If there is a burn ban, when you call in and let them know your address and that you're burning, they'll let you know that there's a burn ban that you're not allowed to burn.
Mm-hmm.
But also calling them also reduces a lot of nuisance calls where your neighbor four houses down sees smoke.
Right.
You know, the neighbor calls in. We'll still send a fire truck out to check it. However, we know that you're burning there.
You know that, yeah. Right. Oh, that's interesting. I did not know that.
It helps out a lot with the nuisance calls of neighbors calling in because they see smoke out of their window. They don't know where that smoke's coming from.
Right.
But the dispatcher can look at their CAD screen and see that the neighbor three houses down is having a controlled burn, and they'll just send one fire truck instead of sending 10 fire trucks out to it.
Because I have had that in my own neighborhood. I'll be coming home in the afternoon and I'll look and there's all this smoke, and I'll go by it and I'll see it. It's someone
Absolutely.
Burning in their backyard.
Yep, and especially in the fall, when the leaves start falling, people start burning their leaves. They'll burn them, and it produces a lot of smoke, and people see it and they call because they're worried about somebody's property.
I guess the other thing with campfires to be careful of is just dry grass around.
Just dry grass around it, right.
And that's where, you know, you don't want it to jump into that. And then all of a sudden your friendly campfire has become a real problem.
Oh, yes, sir. The whole purpose of having it contained in a certain area on dirt away from combustible materials.
So, yeah, and that's the other thing. You've got the combustible materials nearby, again.
The dry grass, the dry leaves, yeah. The vegetation, dry vegetation, ground vegetation.
Make some plans ahead of time.
Make plans ahead of time.
You can go.
Be ready to do whatever you need to do to get the fire out if it comes out of your contained area.
Well, and just like Katie and I were talking a few minutes ago about with things on the river, and you're putting fire personnel at risk. These kinds of things,
absolutely.
Too.
Oh, absolutely. In the woods, fighting a brush fire can be super dangerous. You never know what a tree, if the fire is on the inside of a tree, because the tree is hollow, the tree could definitely fall on some of the firefighters if they're not being careful, not aware of their surroundings when they're out there.
Fighting fires, obviously, it's hot, but when you're fighting a fire in conditions you know, summertime with all that gear, that's got to be hot.
Oh, absolutely. It's definitely hot, and we take more frequent rehab. We send the firefighters to rehab more often.
Rehab on the fire scene.
Rehab on the fire scenes, where they're getting water, they're getting their vitals checked out, they're getting hydrated.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So we have a whole unit assigned that's what they do. They're responsible on a fire scene to make sure that the firefighters are staying hydrated, staying healthy.
Interesting, because I thought when you said that you were just talking about afterwards.
This is during.
That's why, you know, we'll have extra crews, extra manpower there, so that we can rotate those crews through rehab on scene. We can make sure that they're, you know, getting electrolytes, make sure they're getting water, make sure they're getting, if they need some food, we can get them food. They can take their gear off for a minute because that gear gets warm after a while.
Yeah, yeah. That's really interesting. I mean, because if you are lacking any of those things, you may make mistakes. You can put yourself in a tough situation. This way, you're ready for anything.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I did not know that. I thought I understood what happened at a fire scene, and did not know that was part of the whole thing.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Absolutely. Any big call we go to, that's any big fire or any fire we go to, we're sending a rehab unit with them.
We know when we talk about it, I'll go by firehouses and see the people there training or doing things. What kind of things do they? What kind of things at you know, just as far as training, you know day in, you know, every day kind of training do you guys
so
do?
You know, there's that physical fitness component, so a lot of them will work out in the gym or with gym equipment, and then just practicing those routine functions that we would do on a fire ground. So, you know, throwing ladders, stretching hose lines, flowing hose lines. For the drivers, you know, practicing connecting to those hydrants, because you have to secure that water source quickly, or else, you know, that tank of water is going to run out quickly.
Right.
And then when we get into talking about the ladder trucks and the heavy rescues, they have some more specialized things that they may be practicing. You have to be pretty skilled to place that ladder truck to the building. You know, you don't want to put the ladder through the roof. You don't want to stick it through a window that still has a window pane in. So they'll drive around and they'll practice that. And then on the EMS side, they'll practice those skills too, because like anything, if you don't use it, you lose it. So making sure we're practicing the whole kind of breadth of skills that we have. This week they've been at an acquired structure, practicing some different search techniques. Sometimes that's hard to do in a big open firehouse, practicing search techniques, especially, you know, when you know the layout of the building.
Sure.
But they've had the opportunity to go through, search some different areas, practice some different search techniques in different environments as well.
Interesting. And I guess with the technology, when you get a call and you're going to a location, do they have access to, you know, where is there a water supply nearby, or what the lay of the land is like of wherever they're going in the county?
Yeah, so they'll be able to tell, is it a hydranted area? The whole county is not hydranted, so they'll be able to know where the closest hydrant is, what the water flow of that hydrant is. They'll be able to know, hey, there's no hydrants in this area, but there's a pond nearby, there's a reservoir nearby that they may have to draft from. And the crews that work in those areas are pretty familiar with where there's hydrants and where there isn't hydrants. And then they'll start calling out their water supply plan so that everyone who's responding to that fire is on the same page about that, making sure. And then also we have, you know, some residences that are back some very narrow driveways or are back some very long driveways. So how much hose are we going to need to lay out if we can only get one engine back there, or we can barely get an engine back there? So just being cognizant of that too.
But and all those decisions have to be made so quickly.
Split second decisions.
Yeah. Yes.
And several things are happening all at the same time.
Right. So which
comes,
is what
comes down to pre-planning and the reason they're training is the muscle memory. Like, we don't want them to do this the first time. in an emergency situation. We want it to be second nature for them when they go out, and that's why they're out throwing ladders. We don't want them the first time they throw a ladder to be in an emergency situation.
Yeah.
Or the putting the ladder truck where it needs to be placed. We don't want that to be the first time.
There's more to it than just sitting around waiting for the call. There's being able to know what to do when
that call happens, and be able to make that split second decision that they need to make.
Especially when your adrenaline's pumping and you're under stress, being able to still perform under those conditions.
Well, in Katie, all of your reports when you discuss various fires that fire and rescue, it always amazes me how quickly, from the time the call comes of when they're on the scene, boy, I mean, it's impressive. And that's why as you're talking about this, I'm thinking, how do you do all of this and yet get to a scene in just a couple of minutes?
Yeah, I was just talking to someone the other day, you know, when we do have a working fire, there's so many things that have to happen very quickly and simultaneously. And as the crews are getting there, you know, quickly but safely. Because if we can't get to the scene safely, we can't help you. So getting there, you know, the driver is trying to secure that water source if it's on an engine. They're trying to make sure they're appropriately placed, because it's kind of a you have to think about where all the apparatus are going to be placed, because if someone's in the wrong place, you could be blocked in, and if a medic unit gets blocked in and they have a patient, then we've got to kind of rearrange that. If someone parks in front of the hydrant that we need, if the ladder truck can't get to the front of the building, so it's all those things we have to think about. They have to think about where their water source is going to come from. When they get on scene, they do a 360-degree lap to see what their conditions are. Do we have victims who are visible? Where is the fire at? Where are our exits going to be once we get in? If we find ourselves in a bad situation once we're inside, how are we going to get out of that? When the ladder truck gets there, they're going to start throwing ladders, making sure we do have those extra points of egress. But there's so much that has to happen, and that's why they train. So they train not only with themselves in their own unit, but they'll get a couple of engines together, a couple of different companies together to practice all together, because if those are the companies you're running with on a lot of calls, it makes sense to train with them and kind of have, you can't plan for everything, but you can at least know what your role is going to be, so that you're not getting in someone else's way, that you're making sure your whatever you need to do is done so that other people can do what they need to do.
And Ben, this is also an illustration of why you talk about, as families, to have a plan to go to a place, so you're able to find out that information quickly.
Correct. Through pre-planning and the technology that we have on the fire trucks, we can see where people are going to be at when we get there, based off the type of structure that we're going to, or the type of area we're going to.
And how you fight the fire is determined. If you pull up and there is everybody, or you know that there's nobody in the house, but if someone is, that changes probably the thinking of how you do things.
Absolutely. It the time of day, right? So we go to a house at 10 o'clock at night versus we go to the house at noon. More likely to have somebody there at 10 o'clock at night that we have to account for, right? We still want to account for them at noon, but they're more likely going there. We know somebody's probably there,
right?
They're not at work. And then just the type of area also. Like, we don't want to go to a park in the middle of the day. We know there's going to probably be lots of people running around. We have to pay attention to these people.
Yeah.
And in a high-stressed environment situation, normal people aren't thinking straight. So we have to pay attention to them and make sure we account for everybody in the area.
Well, and Katie, as you described it too, just all the things going on and just all the training that firefighters do, it does make it important for families to do that training. Have a plan for everybody. They know what to do.
Yeah, I mean, kind of like the other things we've talked about too. You know, we're planning on our part, but you can plan on your part too. Talk to your family about how you would get out of the house. In the middle of the night when it's dark and smoky, that's not the time to start thinking about it. Because again, like, we're experiencing that stress and adrenaline. So are the homeowners too. So talk to your family if you've just moved. If you're going to stay at, you know, an Airbnb or a rental house this summer, when you get there, have that conversation. It takes 2 minutes. Make sure you have those smoke alarms that are working. And then plan for your abilities. If you have someone in your house who isn't able to walk down the stairs, they may need to shelter in place until the firefighters can come in and rescue that person. So, of course, having those safe behaviors, you know, making sure you're not leaving your cooking unattended, things like that. But again, making sure you've talked to your family about how you would get out. Where would your two ways out be? What would your plan be? Having that door closed if you need to isolate and shelter in place, because going down the stairs would, you know, cause more injury.
Yeah. Wow, interesting stuff here this morning. Stafford Fire and Rescue in. Katie Brady, Ben Goldman here this morning from Stafford Fire and Rescue. Quick break. We'll continue on. We'll talk about fireworks when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:32.
From the Fredericksburg.today online news studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station focused on Fredericksburg. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230. You can weigh in about today's topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230 and by text at 540-371-5756. Here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Katie Brady and Ben Goldman here this morning from Stafford Fire and Rescue. And so a half hour into the show, Katie, we finally start talking about the topic we actually said we were going to talk about.
The fireworks.
Fireworks. It's that time of year, and I see some of the stands already going up, and it's here, and there's really a lot to be careful about. When we talk about safety, we're at that point now.
Well, I'll let Deputy Chief Goldman talk about the fireworks side of things, but just really quickly, those fireworks, even the sparklers, burn very hot. Like 1200 degrees. So that's, you know, almost 3-4 times what you would bake cookies at. And if you've ever like accidentally burned the edge of your arm on the oven, think about how much hotter those are and how much faster it's going to burn your skin if you are letting a small child use them. I mean, people frequently do that.
Everybody, you hand a sparkler, that's what you do. You hand it here, have fun. 1200 degrees?
They can burn very, very hot.
1200 degree metal stick,
right?
You're allowing your kid to run around with.
Yeah,
they burn very super hot.
Oh, I did it all the time. Here, you can have this, and you know, go, you know, and you encourage them, you show them how. Yeah, you move them around.
Yeah,
think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So that's one of like the number one thing under the safety part. Is never let children handle the fireworks,
right?
Because like Katie said, they're super hot, and you don't know what's going to happen with them. They could explode, and they're not supposed to explode, right? But they could. There's that potential for that to happen.
And that's the thing with any kind of fireworks.
Any fireworks.
Because I've seen and I've heard situations on 4th of July where people will, they never expected it. And I've seen it in my own neighborhood.
Correct. One of the other things is always follow the instructions on the firework on how it should be placed, how it should be lit, where it should be lit. You want to do it in a safe area away from houses and vehicles and other things that could burn.
We should say that, I mean, Virginia's fireworks, what you can legally have.
So there's, in Virginia, there's a permissible fireworks list that the State Fire Marshal's Office in Virginia puts out. And every year they test them. And to get they're being tested by the state to be able to be used in the state of Virginia. The biggest thing with that is they're not allowed to rise into the air. Yeah. So they're not allowed to move right into the air, across the ground. They're not allowed to explode. Other things, the sparks that come out of the top of them aren't supposed to be above 12 feet.
Okay. So the ones that mentioned those fireworks stands that are being inspected.
So you are inspecting them?
Oh, absolutely. We inspect every one of them. We start getting them in. They start opening up around June 1st in the county here. And we, before they can open, we have to go inspect all of their inventory to verify.
Buying, yeah, so if you're buying it from there, they're within that permissible firework
list. Yep.
It's when people go
to other states elsewhere. Where we have a problem.
We have a problem, right.
That they can get those ones that don't fall within those categories. So if you're looking to do a little fireworks show safely in your neighborhood where you've got enough space and you're going down the street to the fireworks stand that's sitting, you know, in front of the grocery store, you're going to be buying those fireworks that are on that list. Again, you still want to do it safely. You still want to make sure you have a water can nearby and that you've got, you're following the instructions on it. Mm-hmm. But those are going to be fireworks that are within that permissible list.
One of the other things is never try to relight a dud, mm-hmm. which is a firework that didn't activate or didn't go off like it was supposed to. Just let it set, wait. Let it set for 20 minutes and then soak it with water and dispose of it. Don't try to relight it. You could be sitting over top of it, looking at it, trying to get it to light because the fuse is just very short at this point. And it goes off. It could be super dangerous.
Well, we always hear it, and then it can really be super dangerous and even... You hear about those kinds of cases every year where somebody's gotten injured
by fireworks.
You lose a hand or something.
Right, and it's all because they didn't follow. Most of the time, it'll track back to they weren't using the firework the way it was designed to be used.
I know it's in some years, especially when we get to 4th of July and it's so dry. I know fire officials in the area will really urge people not to use those fireworks, any fireworks at all, but especially the ones that aren't the legal ones, because there have been sometimes after 4th of July, I see on my roof there are, you know, something has landed, and you just think, what could have happened here?
We've had house fires from fireworks being lit off down the street. They go, when they go up in the air, they explode. You don't know where the remnants of that explosion is going after they've gone off in the air.
Yeah.
So yes, absolutely, stuff can land on people's houses. They land in dry brush or the dry vegetation because we haven't had rain, and result in a fire.
It's not a great way to make friends.
Even if you're going to the stands in front of the grocery stores or on the side of the road here in the county that have been inspected. One of the big things that we see a lot is they go out, they light their fireworks, they have a good time, they have a good celebration. Then they take all their trash that's been collected and put it in one of their little rolling trash cans and move it back up by their house
or in
their garage. Because their HOA doesn't allow the trash can to sit outside. And in 30 minutes or an hour later,
mm-hmm.
we are being dispatched for a house fire.
And the danger with that, too, is, you know, a lot of people wait till it gets dark outside. They do their fireworks. They put them in the trash mm-hmm. can. They roll it back inside. Everyone goes in and goes to bed. Well, and then, like Ben said, 30 minutes, an hour, 2 hours later, we roll up because now your house is on fire and potentially your neighbor's house is on fire too. It's just like when we talk about in the wintertime ashes from fireplaces, those things need to cool off. Bring out a big bucket, put it all of your, you know, your trash from your fireworks, just soak it in that bucket, leave it out in your yard, leave it in your driveway.
Right.
Let it soak for a while. Let it cool off. Deal with it later.
Let it soak till the next day. Mm-hmm. You're not going to hurt nothing. And then put it in your trash.
Yeah, because the case that you just talked about, Katie. I mean, you both have talked about it. Those are the real scary cases because you just feel like, okay, well, you know, we all you walk away.
You feel like you've done everything right.
Yeah.
And the accident happens at that point.
Mm-hmm. And especially with the coals, and every year it seems like there are a few fires in the area, and that's exactly what's happened, where you just leave it out on the deck and the deck catches on fire, mm-hmm. and pretty soon the house is on fire.
Yep. And the same thing goes in the summertime with everybody grilling. with charcoal. They'll empty their charcoal grill out after mm-hmm. they're done charcoal grilling. The charcoal could stay warm. You could have embers in there for 2 or 3 days later. And then they're putting them in. They're like, oh, well, we did this yesterday. We need to clean the grill up today. Right. So we dump the coals into a cardboard box, not realizing that there are still hot embers in there.
Mm-hmm. Well, when we talk about fireworks, especially in the laws in Virginia, they're there for a reason, as you have described, for safety.
For safety, yeah, absolutely. The state fire marshal's office has tested the fireworks, and they believe these are the safest ones, and they pick the safest ones for the safety of the public or the community.
And if it's windy, don't.
Oh, absolutely. Don't. Yeah. Wind or in a storm, a thunderstorm or anything like that, you don't want to be putting any. You don't want to be shooting fireworks off in a storm, when it's windy, anything like that.
Now, there are several professional shows across the region.
Yep.
And those are permitted and, you know, are done by professionals. And a lot of them are free and have other activities to do. So that's also an awesome option. If you do want to see the big ones that go up in the sky,
yeah,
and those have designated areas. So, you know, like we talked about that debris falling down, it's falling into an area that's not going to damage someone's house or car, things like that.
Yep. Leave it. The safest way to enjoy a fireworks show is leave it to the pros.
Yep. And it's cheaper that way,
it's
too.
It's cheaper that way.
Fireworks themselves can be really expensive, but besides that, just the danger that you're putting yourself, your kids, your neighbors, your house in.
Yep.
Is it worth it?
Is it worth? It's not worth the danger or the aftermath of what could happen if something goes wrong. From people getting hurt to burning houses down, it's not worth it.
And if you're putting on a show in your neighborhood and you have illegal fireworks, you put yourself at risk of being charged.
Oh, absolutely! It's a class one misdemeanor in the state of Virginia to obtain or possess illegal fireworks.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
I'm sure 4th of July for all of you is a tough time, because you're having to. I mean, you really have to be on alert and on guard of what could be happening, and you know, in where and to what extent.
Absolutely. 4th of July is our busiest day of the year. That's one day that nobody's allowed to take off that day. You can't be on vacation on 4th of July. You're working, and the fire marshal's office will be out working the 4th of July.
Yeah.
Trying to educate the communities, educate the public on why they shouldn't be shooting off the legal fireworks.
Yeah, yeah. Well, be careful. Have a fun 4th, but please be careful.
Absolutely. Make it an enjoyable celebration, but yeah, be careful with your activities.
Like Katie said, there are all kinds of free shows around with the big fireworks that are being monitored. That's where to do it, not in your driveway.
Absolutely. Just a couple of the pop that I can think of right off the top of my head in Stafford. We have Acquire Harbor who has a fireworks show, and then Pratt Park
does, yeah.
That's the big show for Stafford County. And then around the area in other jurisdictions, there's other fireworks shows going on also.
Okay. I think the busiest day of the year, and nobody can take a vacation.
Nobody
can
take a vacation on 4th of July. No,
that makes that does make sense. Deputy Fire Chief Ben Goldman here this morning. Katie Brady is here, the Public Information Officer for Stafford Fire and Rescue. We will conclude this morning when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Great stuff this morning with Stafford Fire and Rescue. Katie Brady and Ben Goldman here this morning talking about all kinds of stuff. The other thing we should talk about is just hydrating and taking care of yourself on these hot days.
Yeah, it's I think they said, you know, before we started talking, this is one of the hotter days today.
Yeah.
And it's not going to get much cooler for the rest of the summer. So
right.
If you're going to be out and about doing sports stuff, if you're going to be, you know, taking a float down the river, kayaking, hydrate, not just with alcohol or juice or whatever, but with water. Make sure you're replenishing that. Make sure you're wearing sunscreen because, you know, if you're out in the sun all day, you're going to get dehydrated, and wearing that sunscreen too is going to help you from getting really sunburned. And then just one other health thing, like we were talking about, at those 4th of July, like neighborhood block party celebrations, things like that. You know, everyone loves a good potluck, loves to bring their food in.
Love that potato salad.
love the potato salad, and it's really fresh at 2 o'clock. But come 6 o'clock, when people are still kind of picking at their food,
and it's still sitting out,
and it hasn't been refrigerated, it's probably best to just bypass, you know, some of those things. Or if people are like grabbing at different food with their hands, and they've gone off to play in the playground, and then they come back and they want to grab another handful of chips with their playground hands, just being cognizant of that. Not trying to be a germaphobe, but being cognizant of the food that you're eating, because the emergency room on the 4th of July is not the place to be.
No. And food poisoning is not the thing to have.
No.
That can just...
That takes you out for a few
it
days.
Does. It does. We can laugh about this, but it's kind of like somebody, an adult needs to kind of, there needs to be somebody... At the picnic, kind of overseen.
Or consider bringing, some coolers to keep, not just, drinks cool on, but some of those things that probably should stay cool.
Yeah, like Katie said, bring coolers or ice to set the food on to keep it cool. The stuff that needs to be kept cool. The potato salads, the macaroni salads, the...
All the salads that aren't actually salads.
On July 5th, you don't want to have a terrible sunburn.
A terrible sunburn, burns from fireworks,
and
food poisoning.
And food poisoning.
Right.
I mean, the triple crown there, you don't want to have that.
No, sir.
So,
I mean, we will come help you, but we hope you have a great 4th of July without us.
Right. That's the whole key that you want. You want everyone to have fun, but realize, don't put your kids in danger by handing them a sparkler or, leaving the potato salad out or any of these kinds of things.
There are very preventable things.
That's the thing. It's all so preventable. After the fact, you sit around and just say,
How did we let this happen? Right. We just want all the communities to have a safe, enjoyable celebration.
And everyone wants to be the most popular in the neighborhood, but you're not going to be the most popular in the neighborhood if your fireworks are illegal and they start a fire or worse.
We've had people burn their neighbors' front yards to a crisp, their houses.
There's vehicles, front yards, vehicles.
Or even just like if you have all the ash and debris raining down on your vehicle, again, not a great way to make friends.
No. No. And I know every time we get to 4th of July and when we get especially near, and I now, as we have talked about this, Fire and Rescue always puts out just alerts of just please be careful. We don't want to have to come and, cite you for something that you have is illegal or having to, or if you've gotten injured or any kind of thing.
Right. The first time we meet you we don't want to come meet you to have to cite you for having illegal fireworks or come meet you because you weren't using your firework correctly and you got burned or you got injured by it. Or you were enjoying that potato salad.
And now look at
and
you.
And now look. now we're coming to meet you for the first time. That's not how we want to meet you.
No. And if you're going to do all of this down by the river, make sure if you go out in a kayak or anything that don't drink alcohol and put a life jacket
on.
Wear your life jacket.
Wear your life jacket.
It's as simple as that. Well, thank you, you two. This was great.
Thanks for having us.
I learned so much. We'll have to get together in the fall and again at the holidays to talk about things.
That sounds great.
Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Katie Brady and Ben Goldman, Stafford Fire and Rescue. Don't make them work on 4th of July. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. We'll see you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA, focused on Fredericksburg.